Morning, everyone. Today's daf and gittin is known by the Thankful Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is known as Zichron Nishmas Lipa Gabriela Bashmuel. We start today on the Mishnah on and Hamad Beis. The fifth parak of Gittin thematically is dedicated to the topic of Tikkun. Numerous takanas that were made by the Chachamim. Most recently, in the previous Mishnah, we talked about the Tikkun of Tikkun Meirish, the Takanas HaShavim. We want people to facilitate, help them do tshuva a little bit easier. So if they take a beam, they steal a beam, and they make it as part of their house, so they only have to pay back for it. As we learned yesterday, it's Machlokes Bisham and Beisilo. Whether or not there's a Takana altogether, Bisham says no, Beisilo says yes. But anyway, just an example of some of the Takanas that we've been discussing. Most recently, the Mishnah, the last Takana that we learned together was about a carbon chatzis that was stolen. So it's a special takana that was made that validates the carbon and makes the carbon acceptable. We'll discuss that at the end of yesterday's daf as well. So, okay. So a number of various takanas. Here we're going to be discussing a takana that's really a little more historical than the others, and it has to do with the destruction of Chorban Bayis Sheni. And for all those of you who know what's coming up in the Gemara, we're going to today start the Agadah that deals with the Chorban Bayis Sheni, destruction of the Second Temple. Occurring just nearly 2,000 years ago, so the Gemaras that we're going to be seeing are going to be Agadata, Divrei Agadata, historical accounts, and also some Agadata thrown in to navigate through some of the more terrible times during our history. So that's coming in today's daf, and not only is that coming in today's daf, it really is going to take over today's daf, and it'll take the next 2.5 daf of the Gemara to be covering this topic. But before we start that, let's start with the Mishnah, and the Mishnah over here is going to be talking about a takana that was made as a result of the Sikrikan. Sikrikan are bandits of non-Jews. They were extortionists, basically, but they were worse than extortionists. At least extortionists pay for that which they take. They didn't even pay for that which they take. They basically took people, threw them out of their property, and assumed ownership of that property without paying for it at all. So these are the Sikrikan. So the question then becomes: let's say another Jew wants to buy the land from the Sikrikan. The Sikrikan is not really the owner; cannot be the owner. Didn't pay for it. The original owner did not willingly give it over to the Sikrikan. So the Mishnah is going to be discussing how do we view a sale, a purchase from a Sikrikan. So that's going to be the discussion in the Mishnah. So the way the Mishnah first presents itself is Lo Yah Sikrikan BeYehuda BeHaruge Melchama, during Maharuge Melchama, which means during the final campaign against the Second Temple. So there wasn't Sikrikan. But however, Miharuge Melchama Ve'elech Yesh Basikrikan, but from Haruge Melchama onward, from that historical point going forward, there was Sikrikan. The Gemara later on is going to ask the question that seems to be so counterintuitive, meaning if there are going to be a group of Sikrikan, non-Jews who are so ready to dispose of Jewish life, it would seem to be just the opposite, that they would live during Haruge Malchus, not after Haruge Malchus. So obviously this line of Mishnah needs a little clarification. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain what that first line of the Mishnah meant. In the meantime, however, what is a takana? So the Gemara now is going to tell us. So the Gemara says, first of all, let's go over what the basic halacha is. A Sikrikan took a land away from another Jew. Not another, but a Sikrikan took a land away from a Jew. Okay, and he didn't pay for it. And he forced it out of him. And basically the transaction went like this. Either give me your land or I kill you. So the Jew says, okay, I'm much happier with my life than with my own land. Take my land. Okay. That's how the transaction went. Now, as we already pointed out, the Sikrikan doesn't really own the land. He's just merely holding the land, and obviously he didn't pay for it, and that's not a Kenyan. Okay. Now, another Jew comes over and buys the land from the Sikrikan. So the Gemara says it depends. So, lakach misikrikan v'chazav v'lakach mi'balabais mekobato. If, let's say, somebody wants to buy that land. So if he first goes to Sikrikan to buy the land, and then he goes to the original owner, so Mekach Bato, that's not considered a valid Mekach. Why not? Because when you go first to the Sikrikan, and afterwards you go to the Jew is not going to give you an honest answer in terms of whether or not he wants the sale to be valid or not valid. In fact, think about it. If the Sikrikan already says, yes, I'm prepared to sell you the land, what else is the original Jewish owner supposed to say? He's going to say, well, if he says it's okay, I think it's okay as well. Meaning, remember, it's a Sikrikan who forcibly took the land away from the original owner. So the you're not getting an honest answer from the original owner. That's not considered a valid sale. So, well, Gemara's going to ask that question. And but when I say the Gemara's going to ask that question, don't wait for that answer today. That answer is coming like 3 days from now. But okay. So mibalabais mechobato. Mibalabais v'chaz v'lakach misi krika mechokayim. However, if let's say you want to buy that land, if you first go to the Jew, the original owner of the land, and you say, I'd like to buy it, and then you go to the Sikrikun, and I'm sorry, and you got approval from the Jew, and then you go to the Sikrikun, that's a valid way of acquiring the land. Okay, so the what the Mishnah is telling us is in terms of the basic halacha, so if you want to buy the land from the hands of the Sikrikun, you first have to consult with the original owner, who still is the owner, and then and if he gives you approval, then you can go to the Sikrikun, and then you can buy the land. That's the only way to do it. And the Gemara says, look, while we're on the topic, let's discuss something which is extraordinarily similar, and that's the following. Let's say you buy a land that was owned by a man, but he was married. And that means that his wife had a lien on that. So really, you understand that when you buy property from a husband, so that property which has a lien on it, that lien is represented by the ksuva, so that land may be taken away from you, because in the event of death or divorce, if the husband predeceases her, or if he divorces her, so now he's going to have to pay her a ksuva, and that land is mortgaged against that ksuva. So that means that that land could be very well taken away from you. So what you would like to do is you would like to buy the land and the lien. So you are going to really have to deal with two people. The husband owns the land. The wife owns the lien. So now the question is, how can you go to both parties and understand that you're actually buying both the land and the lien? So, lakach min ish v'chazav lakach min isha. So if you go to the first to the husband, and then afterwards you go to the wife, mechobato, that's not good. Meaning, we cannot assume that the wife is giving you an honest answer of, yes, I'd like to sell you my lien on that land. In fact, Rashi points out, once the husband says yes, the wife is going to want to please her husband. So the wife is going to say yes just to make her husband happy. So the so you're not really getting you're not getting an honest answer from her, and so therefore you cannot assume that the sale is a valid sale. But mina isha v'chazav lakach min isha. However, the proper order over here is first go to the lien holder. That's the woman. That's the wife. If she says yes, then and only then you can go to the husband, and then mechokayim, and then the mekach will be a valid mekach. Zu mishna rishona. Okay, so now all this was the first position, meaning that what we have just learned now is, in the event of Sikrikun taking the land away from a Jew, forcibly removing the land from the Jew, threatening his life and not paying for the land, and how do you properly buy the land from the Sikrikun? So we just learned together the proper way to do it. First go to the Jewish, or the original owner, and I say original, meaning he's still the owner. Go to the Jewish owner of the land. First get a consent from him, and then if he gives you consent, then and only then can you go to the Sikrikun and buy from him, and the order in the reverse does not work. And then the Mishnah went on to say that we have a similar halacha as it relates to buying the land and the lien from the husband and the wife. Okay. Mishnah, based in Shalachim Amru, and then it comes along based in Shalachim, meaning, here's the takana. What we're going to learn later, and I say later now, I know it's coming much later, 4 days from now, but later we're going to learn that basically the takana over here, what was the driving force behind the takana? Let's get our land back. Meaning the idea of having land in the hands of non-Jews is terrible. And so basically what the takana is going to do is it's going to facilitate the purchase back of the land from the Sikrikun. Because originally, the only way you could do it is by first going to the original owner, then going to the Sikrikun. You need two consents, and it's difficult. So here, the takana is basically going to facilitate, let's get that land back out of the hands of the non-Jew.
Are you encouraging people to understand how somebody could steal land? Hold up. Throw the owner off.
That's what's happening.
Why did they threaten them with their life? Did they sign the title?
Well, again, we're going to talk about shtaris later on. The Gemara is going to bring that up as to whether there was or there wasn't a shtar. That discussion is coming up later. We'll talk more about that later.
But you're encouraging the speaking to do it again.
Yeah, correct. In other words, admittedly in this takana, So it does sound like you're incentivizing this kind of business transaction. But again, the real driving force is get the land out of the hands of the non-Jew. So alokech misikrikon, no. Oh, and I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt myself. why not? We're gonna learn in the Gemara. We'll learn this in just a moment. That there comes a point in time where if the Sikrikin are so widespread, so then the rabbis are not going to institute this. The only time that the Chachamim institute this is when this happens with some form of moderation. Otherwise, you're right. Otherwise, you know, there's no end to this. So Alokech now. I'm sorry. Mishnah Rishona. So basically, here's the takana. You want to buy from the Sikrikin, go for it. Go for it. You don't need to ask permission from both the original owner and the Sikrikin. Just buy from the Sikrikin. Now, he's going to sell to you at a discount. And of course, why not? Meaning, how much did he buy for it? How much did he pay for it? Nothing. So good for him. So that he's working with a tremendous profit margin. it's great. So he's gonna discount it. The Gemara says basically you can assume that he'll sell at 3/4 of its original price. So he'll give you a quarter off. What a nice guy. So now you understand that you're not really paying full value for it. So what do you do with that quarter that you quote unquote saved? So you take that quarter and you give it back to the original owner. The Gemara says that's the institution in terms of how to buy land back from the Sikrikin. Now the Gemara says now in terms of buying it out of the Sikrikin, that's only the only time that there's an option for someone other than the original owner to buy back from the Sikrikin is only when the original owner doesn't have any money. But if the original owner has money, so they of course have first right to buy back the land. I mean, it's their land, so they're given first right. Rebbe Hoshe Beis Din Minimnu. Now Rebbe on this put together, assembled a Beis Din, and basically he gave a enhanced version of this takana, which is Shim Shasa Bifnei Sikrikin Shnei Masar Chodesh, that if this land was in the hands of the Sikrikin for 12 months, so basically the original owner had 12 months in terms of trying to get back his land, he was unsuccessful in doing so, Kol HaKodem Likach Zocha, anyone who comes forward with money in order to buy back the land is Zocha, Avanos and Lebal. But still, even when you buy back the land, again, the same understanding, the same assumption that the Sikrikin is going to knock off a quarter of the price, you can't benefit from that saving. You need to give that quarter back to the original owner. But basically, what Rabbi did is to strengthen, even give more emphasis to this takana, so Rabbi allowed, after 12 months, anyone to purchase it, and no longer is the first right of redemption given to the original owner. After 12 months, anyone who offers money to the Sikrikin is going to buy it back from the Sikrikin. A couple things to iron out in the Mishnah. First of all, that first line in the Mishnah, really difficult. And the Gemara immediately explains that first line in the Mishnah. Historically, it seems to be backwards. There was no Sikrikin during Haruge Malchus, but there was afterwards. No. During Haruge Malchus, so that was war, that was chaos. There you would assume that there was Sikrikin. How could you? The order of the Mishnah seems to be in the reverse. Am Rav Yehuda lo danu ba din Sikrikin kamar. So Rav Yehuda says no. The historical account of when there was Sikrikin, there was always Sikrikin. It's just a question of whether or not we do this takana Sikrikin, whether or not we do this kind of institution that we just described in our Mishnah. So during wartime, we would not even do the takana of Sikrikin. There were so much of them, and there were so and the amount of land grab done by the non-Jews was so out of hand. So, and as we're going to see in just a moment, Jewish life was at such a was so on the cheap that basically we could not enforce the institution of Sikrikin during the destruction of the Second Temple. Only afterwards, when things calmed down, then we could legislate and institute the takana of Sikrikin that we just learned together in the Mishnah. And the Gemara goes on to say, "Damar Rabbi Asi Gimel Gzeres Gazru." There were three gzeres that were decreed during and immediately following the destruction of the Second Temple. Gzir to Kamaita called the Lo Katalik Dalihu. So during the destruction of the Second Temple, so not only was Jewish life cheap, worse than that, it was worse. It was that the Jewish life was meant to be disposed of. Anyone who had an opportunity to kill a Jew, obviously we're talking about the Romans. Any Roman who had the opportunity to kill a Jew and didn't kill a Jew, so he himself was killed. Mitziyasa called the Katalaisi Arbezuze Laisi Arbezuze. Then, as we wind down towards the end of the destruction of the Second Temple, so then the Romans were a little bit easier, so to say, about extermination of the Jewish people. They said that anyone who kills a Jew has to pay for Zuzim. Now, it's not perfectly clear if they're paying for Zuz if they kill a Jew, or if they're receiving as bounty for Zuz for killing a Jew. That part is not clear. that Rashi himself doesn't take a stand on this issue, but various Rishonim have different ways to understand it. Either way, the basic idea is Jewish life was still unbelievably cheap, and so during Gzera number one and Gzera number two, so you didn't have a din sakrikin. As Rashi explains, the reason why is very simple. Now, when a non-Jew goes over and says, either give me your land or give me your life, so the Jew understood that's really the exchange. Meaning it's going to be either I'm giving my land or I'm giving up my life. He understood that this wasn't just an empty threat. This was real. And so, being that he understood that this is a legitimate transaction, when I say legitimate, I, of course, there's no legitimizing this. It means, however, that this is really how the exchange is going to work. You're going to either give me your life or you're going to give me your land. And the Jew understood that's they were serious. So during Gzera number one and Gzera number two, so the land was actually given over wholeheartedly from the Jew over to the non-Jew. So that's why we don't have the din of sakrikin, because the truth of the matter is the non-Jew, and I know it doesn't seem fair, but the non-Jew actually owns the land because that really was an exchange. However, once you get to the basraisa, and once you get to the third stage of the, in other words, this is after the war was over, called the Kata Liktaluhu, where finally there was legislation of, hey, if you kill a Jew, you yourself will be killed, meaning it will be just as much as a capital crime to kill a Jew as it would be to kill a Roman. So once you had that legislation, so now the owner understands when the threat comes, here, give me your land or I'll kill you. So you understand that it's really just a threat. You're just being bullied. Right now the bullying is successful. You're giving up your land. But you understand, however, that you're not going to really give up your land and you're going to fight to get it back. And so after war was over and after things returned back to quote-unquote normal, so now if somebody tries to bully you to give up your land, now you're not really giving it up. And that's why we have now the institution of Sikrikan. Hilka, Kamaisam, and Tiyasa, Kevin Dekadli, Agavonse, Gamo Makne. So the Gemara just spells it out. So during stage one and stage two, where your life really was in the balance, so Gamo Makne, you fully decided that you're giving over the land to the Sikrikan so that your life will be saved. However, Basraisa, Amri, Ayin, Elishko, Lamachar, Tavan Alei Bedina. But then when we get to the third stage where finally the Jew understands that his life is not really in the balance and he's just being threatened and he's just being bullied, so in the short term, fine, take my land. But you understand, I understand that I'm really going to get it back. I'm going to fight you to get it back. And I'll live to see another day in which I'm going to be able to fight you and get back the land. Okay, so that's the Gemara's presentation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not telling us when there was or there wasn't Sakrikin. There was always Sakrikin. It's just a question of when we are enforcing legislation of this takana that we just learned together in the Mishnah. Not during the war, but only after the war. Can't steal car. Yes, in other words, you can't steal car. The karka itself does not have a din of guzzle. But I can evict somebody off his property, and I can assume ownership of the property. That doesn't mean I'm the owner. It doesn't mean that there are kinyanic zela. I don't have the same responsibilities that a gazlan normally has. Correct. But physically, I could take somebody and throw him off his property. Correct. During Zeres 1 and 2, the sale was effective. Okay, with all that stated now, we'll just take a deep breath as I know what's about to happen. Then the Gemara takes incidents, episodes of the Churban by Sheni, puts it together. And obviously, there must be some sort of method to the Gemara coming up ahead in terms of how it's organized and how it's constructed and how it's composed and inserted over here. Clearly, deliberately, the Balei HaGemara, the Balei HaMasora, who put the Gemara together, obviously felt that this is the most appropriate, correct place to place these Gemaras. First of all, I just thinking off the top of my head, in other words, put in Masechta Gittin. Gittin has to do with divorce. We're talking now about the separation of the Jewish people in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Churban Bayis Sheni. Really, this is it, meaning we're now close to finishing the second millennia of being away, removed from the Beis HaMikdash and destruction. So it fits into Gittin. Also, if you look at the perek in which it's in Hanizakin, right? The perek that has to do with damages, meaning it was consciously decided that these agaritas are going to be placed in our Gemara. These agaritas are going to be long. I see the amount of words coming up in the Gemara. I know I'm going to be speaking a lot now, but these are guided along. And if the Tisha B'Av, this is recommended reading for Tisha B'Av. When I say recommended reading, you know, Tisha B'Av are not allowed to learn. So, but the Gemaras that have to do with destruction are subject to being learned on Tisha B'Av. So this is often learned on Tisha B'Av. So you should have some familiarity with these Gemaras even before today's daf. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, let's begin. My dechsev asher adam efach, asher adam efach itamed, umakshel libo yipol bera'ah. Person who is mefach itamed is always afraid, so umakshel libo yipol bera'ah. However, somebody who is makshel libo, who harms his heart, is going to fall to bad. What is the introductory pasuk to the Gata that we're about to learn? When you are deliberate in thought and you act and you act thoughtfully, so then you're not gonna make these kinds of historical changing mistakes that we're going to be describing right now. However, if you are rushed to decision, a little impetuous, so then you're going to be making these kinds of historical mistakes that we're going to be describing right now. So basically, the theme that the Gemara is trying to draw is that people who act hastily, and as a result of that, made historical mistakes. Not just small mistakes, but mistakes that really impacted history. And the Gemara goes on to describe, so, Akamsa Bakamsa, Chor of Yerushalayim, because of the episode of Kamsa Bakamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Atanagol Atanagolasa, Chor of Tormalka, and as a result of a rooster and a chicken, so the city of Tormalka was destroyed, and Asaka de Rispa, Char of Beitar, and as a result of a carriage and a door of the carriage, so Beitar was destroyed. So there are three historical events. Now, obviously, there is no one event that can describe a war and the destruction of the Second Temple. The Gemara obviously is giving us anecdotes, but anecdotes that the Gemara feels is extraordinarily pivotal in terms of trying to mark the destruction of the Second Temple. We begin today with Kamsa Bar Kamsa. So Kamsa Bar Kamsa, Chor of Yerushalayim, as a result of the episode of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Dahu Gavra, Derachmane Kamsa, Ubal Devava Bar Kamsa. There was a person who was very close with a man by the name of Kamsa, but at the same time was an enemy with Bar Kamsa. So two people who had the same name. Interesting comment by the Maharsha over here. The Maharsha says that actually it's a father and a son. Meaning the word Bar Kamsa means son of. So just have that Marsha in mind as we go through the Gemara, right? It's certainly an interesting twist to the whole episode, that it's really a father and a son. Either way, Avasudasa, so this man, by the way, the man throughout the duration of the story is anonymous. We don't know who he is, who his name is. But this man who made a feast in Yerushalayim, Amal Lashami, so he said to his attendant, Zil Aisili Kamsa, go get me Kamsa. Azal Aisile Bar Kamsa. Instead of getting Kamsa, by mistake, the attendant invited Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa was his enemy. Asa Ashkechei Dava Yosef. So now the host sees Bar Kamsa there sitting at his meal. Amarlei Mechti Ugavra Bal Devava Da Ugavrahu. So he says, you're my enemy. So my Baithacha, what are you doing here? Come puk, go and get out and leave. So basically he's trying to kick him out of his party, being that they were sworn enemies. Amarlei Hol Veasai Shavkan Veyavin Alach. So Bar Kamsa now pleads his case. I'm here already. Why not just let me alone? I'll pay for the food that I eat. Just let me stay here. Don't embarrass me by kicking me out. We're now on the top of Nivav Amud Aleph. Amalei lo. The host says, not interested. Amalei yavinalach demei pagadusu dasach. The Bar Kamsa says to the host, I'm so prepared to be saved from, to be spared from embarrassment, I'll pay for half the meal. Amar lay low. The host says, no, not interested in that as well. Amar lay yahavina lach de me kula suudasach. The Bar Kamsa finally says, I'm ready to sponsor the entire meal just so that I don't get thrown out in front of everybody else. Amar lay low. Nakte biyade v'ukme v'afke. And the host grabs Bar Kamsa by the hand, picks them up and throws them out of the party. Amar, the Bar Kamsa says, Hova havu yasve rabbanan. The rabbis were sitting there. Velo machube, and they didn't reprimand and they didn't reproach. So shmamina kanicha luhu. So it must be that they were okay with this as well, that I was thrown out of the party in front of everybody, publicly embarrassed. The chachamim were fine with it. I will go and speak Lashon Hara to the Roman government about the Jewish people. So now, he, Bar Kamsa, goes over to the Caesar. And he says, Mardu by Yehudai, the Jewish people are rebelling against you. Amarle miyemar. So the Caesar says, what proof do you have? Who says this? Amarle shadalu korbana. So he says to the Caesar, why don't you bring a carbon and see if they're ready to offer the carbon or they're not prepared to offer the carbon. We know, we've seen this throughout many Gemaras, that a non-Jew is allowed to bring a carbon in the base of Mikdash, limited to a carbon ola, but a non-Jew is allowed to bring a carbon ola. So it's within the right of the Caesar to present a carbon to the Kohanim so that the Kohanim can offer a carbon on the base of Mikdash. So Bar Kamsa says to the Caesar, if you want to test the loyalty of the Jew and how the Jewish people feel about you at this current moment, why don't you bring them a carbon and see if they offer it? Caesar sends a very fine calf together with Bar Kamsa to be offered in the Mizbeach. And then as Bar Kamsa together with the carbon, the proposed carbon of the Caesar, were on their way to Yerushalayim, Bar Kamsa then puts a blemish in the animal. So either Benif Sefasayim, either he puts a slit in the lip of the animal, or he puts a slit in the eyelid of the animal, or Rashi over here says it's a cataract. A very small physical blemish within the animal. And the Gemara says, and this was deliberate. For us, meaning within our standards of what is considered a physical blemish, it would qualify as a blemish. However, by non-Jewish standards, it would not be considered as a blemish. So basically now, he put the Kohanim slash the Jewish people in an impossible position where you have an animal where from non-Jewish standards, it's not blemished. From Jewish standards, from halachic standard, it is blemished. And so now the Jews are going to be struggling to determine. Now they're going to have to weigh out: do we offer this as a carbon, even though it's not qualified to be brought as a carbon, and violate the isser of bringing a balmum on the mizbeach, or do we keep the halacha, even though at the expense of offending the Caesar? So So here, the original position taken by the Kohanim and the Beis Din in Yerushalayim was: let's offer it. Offered, even though it's a bamum, but it'll create shalom between us and the Romans. So Amar Lo, just going to say, give me a second. Amar Lo Rav Zechariah ben Avkulas, Yomru Balimomim Kraven Legabe Mizbeach. So his position is no, because once we offer it, so then people are going to say that a bamum is going to go on the Mizbeach, and that's not correct. So I don't know. So several Mikdalei Delaleza Valeme. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe solution number two. Let's kill Bar Kamsa so Bar Kamsa cannot report back that we didn't offer the animal on the Mizbeach. Amar Lo Rabbi Zechariah. So once again, Rabbi Zechariah's response is, Yomru Mato Mum Bikachim Yereg. Well, then people are going to walk away with an erroneous conclusion, and that is that if you place a blemish on a carbon, so that's subject to a capital offense. And that's not true. Meaning, it's a law in the Torah to place a blemish on a carbon, but it's not a capital crime in doing so. And once again, people are going to walk away with the wrong conclusion. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now, years later, well after Chorban Bayis Sheni, Rav Yochanan, early generation Amora, so he's commenting now on the decisions that were made right there and then. So this is like the Gemara's editorial of what happened years earlier. Am Rav Yochanan anvunasu shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas hecharifa es beitenu v'sarfa es hechaleinu v'iglisenu me'artzeinu. Rav Yochanan gives a very harsh comment on the decision that was made by Rabbi Zechariah because of his anava, because of his humility. Humility over here may not be the best word to describe it. Usually anava means humility. Could also mean just basically his Okay. Let's just leave it as humility, although I'm admitting that it might not be the best way to describe it. So as a result of that, our house was destroyed, the Heichal was burned, we were exiled, meaning Rav Yochanan seems to be saying point blank, he made the wrong decision. He should have either, now it's not clear to me, I mean I can only guess, he should have either given up on point number one or point number two. Either offered the Karban and, even though it's a Balmum, create the peace between Jews and the Romans, despite the fact of offering a Karban, or point number two, maybe they should have not offered the Karban, but killed Bar Kamsa. Not clear which decision Rav Yochanan was being most critical about. But Rav Yochanan certainly was critical.
In terms of the Korban non-Jew that's got a movement, would the tzitz apply to tzitz merasa or not?
No, that's only for tumah. That doesn't tzitz is only merasa for tumah, not for balmum. Okay.
Finds out comment from Medrash Eicha that this Rav was one of the ones at that feast, and he did not.
Oh, Rav Zecharia.
Yeah. And he did not make any comment.
And he's quoting who? He's quoting a Medrash?
Medrash Eicha.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
That,
right.
Humility.
Oh, in other words, it goes back to that. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So, Shadar Alayhu Leniron Kesar. So now it was sent back to Nero and Caesar, right, Caesar Nero, that the Jewish people are in fact rebelling, meaning they didn't offer the carbon. So Kika, so now he's coming. And so basically he's considering making a campaign against the Jewish people to destroy the Second Temple. Shada Nira Lemizra Chasanafal B'Yushalayim. So he shot an arrow. This is basically an omen that he used in order to portend whether or not this would be a successful campaign or not. So he shot an arrow to the east. Asanafal B'Yushalayim at land of Yushalayim. Lamarav Asanafal B'Yushalayim. Labaruchos Hashamayim Asanafal B'Yushalayim. Wherever he shot the arrow then made a turn and headed towards Yerushalayim, what he considered to be a good omen that Yerushalayim is open and subject to being destroyed. Amalei Yenuka Pesokli Pesokayach. So he turns to a child, and he Jewish child, and he says, okay, let me hear a pasuk. Right? We know that there's no nevuah, but you can get a portal, so to say, into the discussion that's going on by listening to the children. So the children's quoting a pasuk, and that's a quasi nevuah, and even Nero understood that to a certain degree. Amar lei menasati isnik masi be'edom bi'anami Yisrael. I'm going to eventually take revenge against Edom, who destroyed the Jewish people. So Nero understood that, although he was going to successfully destroy the base of Mikdash, but he also understood that afterwards the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to take it out on him. Amar kuchabrichu by lecharuva beisei ubay lechpur yadei ba'u gavra. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to destroy the base of Mikdash. That part I understand, but also Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to wipe his hands on the guy who destroyed the base of Mikdash, meaning me. So he says that part I don't want. Arak va'azov v'igayir. The Gemara says that he ran away, he converted, but nafik minei Rebbe Meir. And eventually, the progeny of Nero was Rebbe Meir. Just historically, by the way, Rebbe Meir was not much later. Meaning, Rebbe Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived during the Churban Bayis Sheni. So Rebbe Meir, being a descendant of Nero, is I don't know the historical accuracy, but one talking maybe two generations later. Shadre Leila Aspasianos Caesar. So now Nero bows out from being the Roman emperor and from destroying the Bayis Sheni, because he understands that Akash Baruch is going to have it out with him when he destroys the Beit HaMikdash. So he wants to be left out of that equation. The Rambam discusses, just in general, you should know, Rambam discusses how could it be that if Akash Baruch Hu wants the Beit HaMikdash to be destroyed, so then why punish the person that's going to do it? The Rambam doesn't discuss it in this case. Rambam discusses it back by Paro. Meaning, he wants the Jewish people to be enslaved, but meanwhile, Paro is going to get punished for enslaving the Jewish people. Right? That doesn't seem to be fair. So the Rambam's basic approach is that although Akash Baruch Hu wants the Jewish people to be enslaved, you don't have to be the Paro who's going to do it. meaning let another paro do it, but you don't have to be that paro. So here also you can use the same basic approach. And in fact, by the way, that approach works perfectly over here. Meaning Nero says, I know the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, but I don't have to be that Caesar who is going to be destroying the... Let another Caesar destroy the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Rambam's basic approach. So Asa Tsar Ala Tlashani. So now Vespasian lays a campaign, a siege around Yerushalayim for 3 years. Hava Bahana Tlase Asire. And there were three wealthy people living at the time in Yerushalayim who were ready to sponsor the Jewish people during the siege, even though there wasn't that many resources, but you had three people who were able to float the Jewish people during this time. Now, Gimel Ben Gurion Ben Kalva Savur Ben Tzitzis Hakesis. So there are three people with three very unique names. Nakdima Ben Gurion. So let's introduce ourselves to the Gvir number one. He was called Nakdimo Shenikta Lochama Ba'avuro. The son stood for him. The Gemara is here making reference to a Gemara in Tanis, where the Gemara over there cites an episode where there was a loan that needed to be paid back, and the loan was due after the day was over. The loan would expire, and it would be in default. And so a miracle occurred on his behalf, where the day lasted a little bit longer than expected. That's just a quick recap of the Gemara over there in Tanis. So so from that point forward, he was given the name Nakdimum. He was able to quote unquote hold the son from going further. So Ben Kalba Savur Shekal Nichlan Sabesu Kishu Rav Kekalav Yotzi Kishu Saveya. The second sponsor was Kalva Ben Savua, named as such because anyone who walked into his house hungry walked out satisfied. And it ends up being Rabbi Kiva's father-in-law. Kishu Saveya Ben Tzitzis Hakesh. And the third sponsor, the third gvir, is Ben Tzitzis HaKesus, Shaisa Tzitziso, Nigros Agabe Kisasos, where Tzitzis would be going on fine linen sheets or satin sheets. In other words, basically wherever he walked, he didn't have to walk on the ground. He walked on satin. Or another way of understanding his name is that he had a seat in the Roman Senate. Right, he had serious political influence. So you had three Gevirim who were living in Yerushalayim during the three-year siege of Vespasian. Chan amar luhuana zayna lo bechite. Usari. So one says he's going to sponsor wheat and barley so that the Jewish people living in Jerusalem would be able to eat. V'chan amar luhu b'dechamra u'debemilcha u'mashcha. A second, one of them says that he's going to sponsor the wine, the salt, and the oil. And the third one says, and I'm going to provide the wood so that people can cook. Right? Their ovens were fueled by wood, so he was going to provide the wood. The Chachamim gave special praise to the sponsor of the wood. Why? Rav Chista, when he would give the keys over to all the treasures in the town, so he would hand over the keys to every to his attendant, except for the key that locked and unlocked the wood, the fuel. That was such an important resource that he didn't trust it with anyone. For one chest of food, you need 60 chests of wood. Meaning, wood is in such demand that the wood, which is fueling in order to cook, so it was so necessary. Now, between the three gevirim who were ready to sponsor the Jewish people living under the siege, so they would be able to hunker down for 21 years based on the resources that were given by these three gevirim. Havabu hani biryoni. But living also within the walled city of Yerushalayim, the siege city of Yerushalayim, were also biryoni. Biryoni, for lack of a better term, hardliners. Jews who felt that there's no room for compromise, they weren't moderates, they felt that there was only one response to the Romans, and that is milchama. And that's it. And there's no other solution to the standoff that they're currently in. Amru Rabbanan Nefek v'Nav Yishlam Ba'adayu. So the Chachamim said, let's try to make peace together with the Romans. So lo shafkuhu. However, the Biryonim did not allow it. Okay, so the infighting that took place within the Jewish people in terms of how to resolve the current situation. Amru l'nefek v'nave karva ba'adayu. So, and their position was Muhammad. We're just going to make war with the Romans, and that'll be the solution. Amlu Rabbanan Lomistayim Ilsa. So the Chachamim said to the Baryonim, it's not going to be successful. We don't think it's going to be a successful campaign. So you now had infighting within the Jewish people in terms of what is the correct approach in terms of how to deal with the Romans. Kamu Kalinu Lahanu Amavre Dechiti Visaare. Kafna. So the Biryonim, in order to accelerate and advance their position, so they burnt all the resources that were in Jerusalem. Okay, burn the boats. Okay. So basically what they did is they put the Jews in the position where the only way they're going to now have to get out of it is only going to have to be through fighting. As a result of what the Biryonim did, there was now famine in Jerusalem. The Gemara tells one anecdote that really speaks to the kind of famine that existed in Yerushalayim. Martha, the daughter of Baitus, was one of the wealthy women in Yerushalayim. Havya, Shadata Lushluchei, V'amalei Zilai Silei Smida. So she sends a message out into the street, go get me fine flour. That's what she was used to eating. Ada Azali Zavin. By the time her attendant went out, so it was all sold out. Amrla Smida Leka Chiver Teika. There's not fine flour, but there's white flour. Amrla Zil Isali. So she instructs her to go get it. Ada Azali Zavin. That was also sold out. Asava Amrla Chivata Leka Gushkara Ika. Okay, there's no white flour, but there's Gushkara, an inferior type of flour. Amrla Zil Isali Ada Azali Zavin. And you know where the story's going. So every time she sent out her attendant, was sold out. Asav Amala Gushkara Leka Kimcha Desari Ika. There's barley. Barley is usually given over to the animals. Barley is not usually eaten by humans. But there's barley out there. Ika Amrale Zilai Sali. Adazazel Izdabin. So, and that was also sold out as well. So now, her attendant was incapable, was unsuccessful in finding any food in Yerushalayim. Havishlifa Misane. Amra, her shoes were already taken off, meaning this is now Marta. Amra Epuk V'Echzei Imishke Chanamid L'Mechel. I'm going to go on. I'm going to see if I can find anything to eat. Ace of Leparta Bikara Umesa. So the Gemara says that she stepped on some dung, and she was so delicate, and she was so refined, she couldn't handle it. She died. Kari Alev Rav Yochum Menzaki. When Rav Yochum Menzaki hears the story, he writes, he says over the following pasuk, not writes, he says over the following pasuk, Haracha Bach Vanuga Asher Lo Nasasa Kaf Ragla, quoting from the Tochacha, forecasting the destruction of Bayesheni. So the delegate amongst you is going to put your foot down, will suffer as a result of that. So the pasuk was foretelling such an episode. The Gemara has another version of exactly how Marta died. She got a hold of one of the dates of Rebbe Tzadok. She got disgusted by the date, and as a result of that, she died. What's the date of Rebbe Tzadok? The Gemara gives us the background information to understand the second version of how Marta died. Rebbe Tzadok fasted for 40 years so that Yerushalayim would not be destroyed. There are numerous Gemaras that talk about the last 40 years of Bayit Sheni, and that basically we were on borrowed time for those last 40 years of Bayit Sheni. The Sanhedrin wasn't in operation during those last 40 years, meaning those last 40 years of the Beis HaMikdash, we already knew it was the end. And the Gemara over here says that Rebbe Tzadok fasted those 40 years. Hard to imagine that he fasted 40 consecutive years, but the simple pshat is he fasted multiple times during those 40 years in order to ask Rachmanis from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Beis HaMikdash will not be destroyed. When he would eat something, he was so emaciated that you were able to basically see the food go down. Now, when they were trying to resuscitate him, meaning basically get him to eating food again, so they brought him a fig, mayitz mayahu, they extracted the juice, vishadilahu, and they threw away the rest of the date. So basically, they gave him liquid, but you know, with some nutrition in it, in order to get him back to health. As Martha was dying, so she took out all her gold and all her silver, she threw it into the streets, and Amra, she said, whoever wants it can take it. And the Gemara quotes another pasuk in Navi, who was also foretelling this episode. The pasuk in Yecheskel says they're throwing out their money into the street because the money is not going to have any value to them. And then the Gemara tells another chapter in this story, where Abba Sikra, who was the head of the Biryone, he was the head of the hardliners, so he was the nephew of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's sister's son was one of the head of the hardliners. So here, drama. In other words, it was not only machlokas within the Jewish people, but within family. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, obviously one of the Rabbanim, who wanted moderation, who wanted to try to create peace between the Romans, was the uncle of one of the hardliners. Havashalach lei, so now, tabitzin alagabai. So he says to his nephew, meet me in private. Let's discuss this uncle to nephew privately. So he says to his nephew, how much longer are you going to do this and basically kill us all in a famine? So the nephew admits to his uncle, what do you want from me? They're hardliners and they're more than hardliners. If I say anything that goes counter to their thinking, they're going to kill me. The epok. So Rav Yochanan Zakkai says to his nephew, let's do the following. You're going to help me. I'm going to escape out of Yerushalayim, and I'm going to save the Jewish people, and you're going to help me escape. So you don't have to take a stand against the Biryonim, but you're going to help me. Efshad avi atzel porta, what I can do is salvage a little bit of the Jewish people. Amalei nokod nafshach b'katsiri, v'leisi kole ama v'leshai lebach. So the plan was the following. Rav Yochanan Zakkai was going to feign an illness and have many people go in and inquire how he's doing, so that the rumors were circulated that Rav Yochanan Zakkai is desperately sick and dying. V'aisei midi sarya v'agni gabach. Take something that smells foul and put it together with you, so that basically the rumors is that you died and the smell of your rotting corpse is starting to permeate. V'lemur denach nafshech, and people say that you died. V'la'ilo bach tamidech, and your students are going to come in. V'lo'leo bar inesh achrina, meaning, and to carry your coffin with your quote-unquote dead body out of the city of Yerushalayim, so have your students take it, don't let anyone take it. So that they don't feel you, because if you're alive, the people who are carrying you will know it. So people know that live weight weighs more than dead weight. And so you have to have students of yours who are in on the plan, who are going to be carrying your body. And who were the pallbearers carrying the body of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? His students, Rabbi Eliezer, together with Rabbi Yeshua. As they were exiting the door of Yerushalayim, the Romans who were standing there at the door, so they wanted to pierce the body just to ensure that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was actually dead. Amalu Yomru Rabban Amalahu Yomru Rabban Dakru. So they said, please don't do that, because then if you were to do that, they're going to say, I'm sorry, not just a small correction, an important correction. It wasn't the Romans who wanted to stab the body. It was the Biryonim who wanted to stab the body. Meaning the Biryonim were suspicious of the fact that maybe Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was not actually dead. So the Talmidim of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, don't do that, because if you're going to stab the body, so then the Romans are going to say, this is how they treat their Chachamim. So Bala Mitzchafei, well, they wanted to, okay, not stab him, but basically club him, just to make sure that he's actually dead. Amalu Yomru Rabban Dachvu. So once again, the Talmidim said, don't do that, because we're going to come out with a mutilated body, and the Romans are going to say, this is how they treat their Chachamim. Pitzchalei Bava Nafak. The door was open, and Rav Yochanan Zakkai was allowed exit out of Yerushalayim. And again, the thought was that he was dead. Obviously, that was the plan. Kimat Allah Hassan, when he arrived over there, just one second, let me just give him a moment. Kimat Allah Hassan, Amar Shamalach Malka, Shamalach Malka. So finally, he gets to Vespasian. And he says to Vespasian, peace be upon you, king. Peace be upon you, king. Amar Le, Mechayavta Trey Katale. So Vespasian says to Rav Yochanan Zakkai, two times over, you are subject to capital punishment. Why? Chada delav malka ana. First of all, I'm not the king. Vespasian at this point in time was not appointed the Caesar. The karis le malka, and you're calling me the king. Vesui malka ana ad haina amaylo asus lagabai. And if you're right, and that's if you're right, so what are you doing only coming to me now? If you felt I was the king, you should have paid tribute much earlier. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai deals with both of the issues. In terms of the fact that you are not the king, so Ivra Malkaat, the truth of the matter is, you will become the king. The Ilah Malkaat Lo Mimser Yushlaim Yadech. Because if you're not the king, Yushlaim would not be handed over to you. Yushlaim is only going to be destroyed by a king. Dichsib V'Halavanon Ba'Adir Yipol. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu describes that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be felled by somebody of might. Ein adir lamelech tichsiv ayah adiro mimeni. The Gemara quotes the pasuk that describes the adir as being the king. Ein levanon la Beis HaMikdash shenemar ha'ara tov azev v'halavanon. And levanon is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara quotes the pasuk to describe that. Udikamar imak anai malo kasis lagabe ad haina. And as far as the other accusation, how come I'm only coming to you now? So he says, look, Biryoni di isban lo shafkinan. The Biryoni did not allow me to go out in order to try to create some sort of peace deal together with you. And that's why I couldn't come. So Armale ilu chavish ol dvash v'darkon kor chala lo yashovan es chavish b'shvil darkon. So this Vespasian says to Rav Yochanan Zakkai, look, let me ask you a question. You have a jar of honey, and you have a snake around the jar of honey. So, and you want it, and you want the snake to go away. So, why don't you just break the jar, allow the honey now to go out of the jar, and the snake is going to go away? And I don't really follow why the snake would run away under those circumstances. But basically, what Vespasian was saying to Rav Yochanan Zakkai is, well, you're the one who kept yourself in that position by not opening up the wall. Break down the wall. Problem, the Romans would have come in, but Yonim would have been taken care of. Ishtik. Now, on that, Rav Yochanan Zakkai did not have a response. So, Kari Alev Rav Yosef, Item Rabbi Akiva, Meshiv Chachamem, Achor Vedatam Yisakel. On that, either Rav Yosef or Rabbi Akiva commented, again, another editorial, later historical editorial, and that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away his thought process in terms of not being able to respond to Vespasian. There was a response that he could have given to Vespasian. Ibaila lememer lo shaklin safsa v'shaklin alei ledarkon. V'katlin alei. V'chavita shafkin alei. In terms of the snake honey riddle, it's not such a riddle. Take a pair of tongs, pick up the snake, kill the snake, keep the jar of honey intact. Meaning, let's just deal with the Biryonim, and under those circumstances, the problem is going to be resolved by itself. But meanwhile, Rav Yochanan Zakkai didn't say that. Why didn't he say that? Kadosh Baruch Hu took away his seichel. Adach yasi pristaka ilay merami. While Vespasian and Rav Yochanan Zakkai are talking, in comes a messenger. Amarle kum demesle kesar. So he says to Vespasian, stand up because Caesar died. V'amre hanu chashiv v'derame lo svich bereisha. And the Senate decided that you're going to be the next Caesar. Havasaim chad misane baila misane achrina. Now, in the middle, as he was receiving this news, so he already had one shoe on, Vespasian, and now he's ready to put on the second shoe. But lo ayol bahu, lo ayol. He couldn't get that second shoe on. By la mishlofei leidach, he wanted to take off the first shoe. Lo nafik, he couldn't take off the first shoe. Amar mai hai, he didn't understand what just happened, Vespasian. So Amar le, so Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, lo titzar shemua tova as yalach. He says, don't despair. You just heard unbelievable news. You heard great news that you're now the Caesar. Dechsiv shmua tova tachin etzem. Hearing good news, so to say, fattens your bones. So that's why you couldn't get the second shoe on. That's why you couldn't take the first shoe off. So elamaita kante, what should you do? In terms of how to solve the problem, have somebody who you do not like walk in front of you. You're going to, quote unquote, shrink down to size. So, and he did that, and he was able to successfully get on his second shoe. So now, Amarle. So the Vespasian says to Rav Yochanan Zakkai, this is crazy. You correctly predicted that I'm going to be the Caesar. You correctly solved my second shoe problem, meaning you are amazing. So Amrle Umeachde Chachmin Zukule Hai Adeina Amaylosin Lagabe, and then they would go into a rerun on the conversation of how come you didn't come any earlier. Amrle Velo Amrilach. He says, I explained this to you already. Amrle Ananami Amrilach. So Vespasian says, yeah, but I explained to you that your argument, your excuse was terrible. So by the way, I know the hour's late. I know we're going to end in just a moment, but I like that. Whenever you have political discussions, sometimes, you know, they go in circles. And I just and look at this as like just such a good example. Like they're rerunning the same conversation, but sometimes in politics, that's, you know, that's what happens. So Amar Lei Mezal Zina Ve'inish Achrina Mishadrana. So he says, look, I'm going to go, and somebody else is going to take this place. Meaning, I'm now the Caesar. They're going to want me back in Rome. So I'm not going to be here anymore. So do me a favor, make your request and make them now. Ela Baimine Midi. So you have my total attention, and I'm going to give you, for lack of a better term, three wishes, and you're going to make them. And he doesn't say that, but and you're going to make them, and I'll give them to you. Amarle. So these are the three requests of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai to Vespasian. Number one, Tein li Yavne v'Chachmeha. Give me the city of Yavne together with the Chachamim. I'll set up a yeshiva. V'Shoshaita de Rami Gamliel. Give me the lineage of Rami Gamliel, so that we'll have Beis David and Malchus Beis David, and ultimately Mashiach. And finally, number three, Vasvasin de Mesayin le Rabbi Tzadok. And also number three is that I want a remedy for Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok, who's just finished 40 years of fasting, and we want basically a way of curing Rabbi Tzadok. Karila Rav Yosef Itema Rabbi Akiva. And once again, on this request of Rav Yochanan Zakkai makes to Vespasian, as Vespasian now turns and goes back to Rome to become the Caesar of the Roman people. So either Rav Yosef or Rabbi Akiva's comment is, Meshev Chachamim Achor Ve'ada'atam Yisakel. Once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them in the position where they were not able to think straight, and they were and they made foolish decisions. So what he should have said was that why not just simply stop sieging the Jewish people? Meaning, instead of making these quote unquote small requests, make a significant, serious request of just stop the campaign against the Jewish people. Now, the who suffered, but the Gemara over here interjects, and the Gemara says, yeah, but over here, Rav Yochanan Zakkai felt that would have been foolish. He thought, Dumakula Hailo Avid Vatsula Porta Nami Lohave. So he thought that he wasn't going to, that request was not going to be listened to, and so therefore he wouldn't get the big request, and obviously he wouldn't not get the three smaller requests. So Rav Yochanan Zakkai felt that this was pushing the limit of the things he can ask from Vespasian. Stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up. Pick it up tomorrow with the remedy of Rabbi Tzadok. Just making a mental note so I know where we're going to start tomorrow. And we'll continue with the Agarata of the Gemara regarding Churban Bayit Sheni.